So this guy, Scott Frost, must be kind of a big deal, huh? We were in Lincoln yesterday to meet up with some friends, and just driving by the stadium, boy, it was filled with red. Those are really kind of exciting things. I don't know if you've ever been to a Nebraska football game, but it's most certainly an event. We've got an enthusiast right here, I know, in front of us. It is very exciting, and there's part of us that really dreams and has this great desire for grand occasions, big events, something way outside of the norm. But much of life, if we're going to be honest, is lived in rather normal ways, kind of in the mundane, isn't it? So the question then becomes, how do we live life as believers who have been identified with Christ in a way that's bigger, though still living in the mundane, normal ways of life? I don't know about you, but there are times, more often than I'd probably like to admit, that at least in the back of your head, you go, boy, this is getting real old, isn't it? It'd be nice for something kind of new to happen. But in Jesus, there most certainly is reason for hope. And the story today is going to help us unpack that hope a little bit. If you haven't already done so, I'm just going to encourage you once again to either lean next to somebody who has a Bible or open up your own and share it with that person next to you, to John chapter 2, where we look at a rather familiar story. Jesus turning the water into wine. Some things have happened as of the unfolding of the gospel so far. There's been a bit of a transition from one rabbinical leader to another. And so in that context and day and age, if you were to grow in your relationship with the Lord, if you were to grow as a believer, particularly as a Jewish believer, you would really want to identify yourself with a rabbi who would show you kind of the ins and outs of what it meant to walk with the Lord in a daily, practical way. Well, God was doing something new, and a handful of people, there's five of them at this point in time, have kind of recognized that Jesus is a new rabbi, so to speak, that has stepped upon the scene. Some of them are John's followers, and John is one who has been kind of a bit of a recluse, and he tells them to follow Jesus, and Jesus is anything but recluse. John chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. Now on the third day there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there. And Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. As we're kind of thinking through this in big terms, one of the things that I think is probably perhaps important is to see Jesus' kind of habits of life. As Rabbi is leading his disciples in the first century, so we kind of think through the same terms. Jesus is not a stuffy guy. John had a special ministry in which he was a little bit of on the fringe, outside of normal rhythms of life, but not Jesus. He's very much social. He's the kind of guy that you would want to come to your wedding. And it is wise to invite Jesus, most certainly, to your wedding. But as he comes with five guys. And it's yet to be determined as to, you know, whether, you know, this was kind of a last-minute thing relating to these five fellows. But here ensues a potential problem. They may have a few more guests than they had anticipated. And here we see the character of Christ come out. verses 2 or 3 through 5. When the wine ran out, Jesus' mother said unto him, "They have no wine left." And Jesus replied, "Woman, why are you saying this to me? My time has not yet come." His mother told his servants to do whatever he tells you to do. Just to backstep a little bit, because we want to get a big picture of what Jesus is all about. There's a certain sense in which Jesus is bringing a new definition of abundance of life into our understanding of what life is about. And so, him just being a part of this party kind of points out to us as believers that, boy, you know, engaging in the world around you is very important. Now, most certainly, there are times for sorrow and discouragement and even pain. We see this in the life of Jesus. But a full life is one that experiences abundance and good things too, the joys of a wedding. And the joys of this wedding are, in fact, in danger at this point in time. Weddings during this time were a long celebration. They'd last for about a week. And so you'd gather all sorts of your friends and your family, and the bride and the groom would be treated like kings and queens. You know, it didn't have a whole lot going on during those ages, and so they really made the most of this. Wine was just a common drink, and it probably didn't have the same fermentation process that it does today and wouldn't have been as strong. No, there are people who have probably abused God's good gift. So what is Mary hoping to see accomplished here? It's doubtful that Mary is hoping to see Jesus perform a miracle at this point in time. This we know of as Jesus' first miracle. So why is she engaging Jesus in such a way as that she's expecting him to do something? It's because he's a person of compassion. Jesus is involved in the lives of others in a very normative way. He's not hiding out. He's socially involved, yet he is a unique person because he's not about himself. He's a person of compassion. And he's a person of action. And so it's almost as if Jesus' mom is just saying, "Okay, you know, I've seen you do things for people before. I need you to kind of step up to the plate. Can you see what's happening here?" She just knows him as the kind of guy who's going to get the job done. It's like, okay, we're going to help this situation. Little does she know exactly what's happening here. There's kind of an interesting dynamic here that's kind of difficult to understand through the translation. When he calls her woman, that wouldn't be, we'd say, okay, in our culture, it'd be like, "Woman." You know what I mean? That's not kind of what's happening here. It's a term of affection. But there's a unique change in Jesus' relationship with his mom at this time. John never identifies her as Mary, but always just as the mother of Jesus. But it's important to understand that she has no inside track. She's having to identify with Jesus in a lordship type situation. And we see that kind of happening in this conversation right now. It may have been in times past that what concerned Mary became the concerns of Jesus. And he was someone she could count on to just go ahead and say, "As a son, I need you to do this." But his ministry is beginning to take off, and something new is happening here, and she has to relate to him in a unique way, which I can imagine was very difficult for Mary, who raised this child from, you know, we have little children here. All of a sudden, I'm having to think of him no longer as son, but in a new way. And so he doesn't say mother, he says woman. And then he says something that seems really strange and odd, talking about my hour has not yet come. What does this have to do with me? It seems really harsh. And that's where the difficulty lies. It's what we would term as an idiom. In other words, it really depends on the context. It was a common saying and how it was said. It was, in a certain sense, a mild rebuke. But basically, it'd be like me saying, you know, don't tell me, right? Or a better even than that would be like, you know, what concerns you in this situation is not the same thing that concerns me. Your concerns and my concerns are different. But it's clear that he has a concern for this situation and he's going to do something, because his mom responds to that in a way that says to the servants, do whatever he tells him you to do. And so there is this subtle shift, and for us, our character in this place is that of the servant, to do what Jesus tells us to do. She may have been had a special role at this wedding, a certain responsibility, but she's no longer calling any shots and asking anybody to follow her lead. She's pointing everything back to Christ. So if we're an observer, if we're one of Jesus' disciples, there's something unique happening in front of us. If we're watching someone and learning from them on how and what it means to follow and live in God's ways, all of a sudden our hearts are turned in a very dynamic way towards the Lordship of Christ. In the sense that he's about to do something radically new. And so he does. Then he told them, now draw out, or go fill the water cups, I'm sorry. Now there were 6 stone water jars, where the Jewish ceremony, for Jewish ceremonial washing, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus told the servants, fill the jars with water up to the brim. And so they filled them up to the very top. Then he told them, draw out some of the water and take it to the head steward. And when they did, he took it, and the water had been turned into wine. Not knowing where he came from, though the servants who had known where the water was drawn from knew, he called for the bridegroom. Scott Frost, probably not his doing, but our culture, they have T-shirts and bumper stickers, right? And license plate covers. The hour of the frost has come.
Frost warnings.
And there's a grand celebration. All the media is picking up on it. Everybody's excited, but Jesus is changing the world in a very covert way. Nobody printed up any T-shirts to say this was going to happen. This isn't going to get a whole lot of news press. But the most important event, the event that the world has been waiting for, is now beginning to break in upon this world that has rebelled against God. The ceremonial washing of the Jews hands for various different reasons had come to an excess. Now, there were some legitimate reasons within the law, but they took that and kept adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. And so they have quite a bit of water available, probably outside, for their guests. And so they can ceremonially purify themselves. But the eternal purification through Christ has come upon the scenes. God is doing away with the old, replacing it with the new. This is the foundation for what it means to be a believer, is to one who has seen, is identified, and has participating in, because they have been drawn in, removed from the old into the new. The old standard could do nothing for you as it relates to the Old Testament, the Levitical law, the Ten Commandments, but point out the fact that you don't have what it takes. Try as you might, you could never make yourself clean. And entering in the age of the Spirit, where there's a washing, a purification through Christ, which we'll talk about a little bit more next week, and a whole new life. It's interesting that Jesus begins his ministry, in a certain sense ends it, with two bookends. Both of them, a wedding feast. There is a great and mighty feast to be had that only those who have a special invitation, only those who wear the righteous requirements of God through the dress of Christ will enter. That's how this comes to fulfillment in the book of Revelation. And those who do not and are not identified with the righteousness of Christ will never enter. But the age of the Spirit is upon us, and we are like the servants doing what Jesus has called us to do. And just as Jesus' disciples are seeing that, okay, God is bringing something new. He is replacing the old with the new. We ask the question, what does that mean? If the old way of doing things is no longer to be a part of my life, what is the new way to look like? Well, as we've seen, it doesn't happen through a great concert. You don't have to sell a bunch of t-shirts. It's not something that happens in social media or the media at large. It's something that is happening in the normal occasions of life. Granted, this is a special event, but nothing outside of what life looks like. God could have set off the greatest of all firework displays, brought the best band on the occasion, and had a flyover if he wanted to, with the angels of heaven announcing, the old is going away, the new is coming. And yet there are only a few that can really see, that have the spiritual eyes and the ability to identify with what is actually taking place. Verses 6 through 8, we continue through the rest of the section. And when the head steward tasted the water that had been turned into wine, not knowing where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, he called the bridegroom and he said, Everyone serves the good wine first. Then the cheaper wine when the guests have drunk, and basically when their taste buds have been compromised. Then you keep the good wine until now. But you have kept the good wine till now. And Jesus did this at the first of his miracles and signs in Canaan of Galilee. In this way, he revealed his glory, and the disciples believed in him. So the disciples had already believed in him, and there is a sense where we need to continue to believe in him. There's a growing belief in him, a greater sense of confidence, and that in many ways is what belief is. I have confidence in Jesus is who he claims to be. But then through witnessing this miracle, there's a continued sense of, yes, I have confidence that this Jesus is who he claims to be. Though there are times in the story as it will unfold that his disciples will doubt. But there's something about this miracle that they recognize that new creation has come upon us. The book of John, up until this point, is kind of interesting. He's been numbering the days. And I've mentioned this before, but he identifies the first week, 7 days, of Jesus' public ministry. And the book starts out with basically the same thing as Genesis. In the beginning was the Word. The one who created all things, the agent by which everything exists, is creating anew. And within their understanding, they sensed that this was exactly what was happening. I think one of the things that challenges us the most as we're looking at this, and myself included, is the whole idea of Jesus' glory. We would rather give our primary glory to another, wouldn't we? I was thinking through this as we're driving, you know, why is it that we get so excited about football and sports and stuff like that? It's not like you're playing. You've never played football, right? No, yeah. So you're not really winning. It's somebody else winning. But that's how we function. That's just our heart's desire, is to identify with the winning team. That somehow makes us winners, and it does. Because you see, we weren't created as to be just individuals. We live in such an individualistic culture. And one of the problems that people have with the atonement, meaning that Jesus dies in our place, the wrath that we deserve, he took. How can that work? How is that fair? Because we live under a representative. Our fundamental identity is not that of our own, but under the representative to which we belong. We want this winning team to represent me, though I have nothing to do with it. I change or affect the outcome of the game. Zip. As much as you think screaming at the TV is going to help them out, it doesn't. But yet, when they win, I share in that glory. Just as an extra, an observer. But that's the story that you and I are brought into. It's not about you and me. It never is. And when it becomes so, it gets ugly. You know? It would
pray for those people when things start to work out for them really well. We weren't created to have that kind of notoriety and glory. And 9 times out of 10, you see that even if it, you don't see it, you know it's there. Something is train wrecking somewhere. Right? You look at these celebrities and these sports heroes, and you know, they're at the top of their game, and what happens? It's because we're not created for that. There is one who exists to receive that type of notoriety. One that exists that is not created, the Creator. And that our being created in His image is to draw us to. That is to receive that type of glory. It's the Son of Man, which, as we noticed last week, is a title relating to the most important figure of all. That's who Jesus is. Just prior to this, Jesus had made a mention to Nathanael that, you know, impressed with what he did believe. But he says, you know what? Greater things are coming. It's just getting started. Jesus is the place where heaven and earth collide. And it's happening right in front of them. And Jesus is the place where heaven and earth still collide. We can function one of two ways as believers. As an unbeliever, you really basically, you can be a good religious moral person, but the heart and the function of your life is one turned in on itself. That relates in many ways to the old way. It's just everything I do, everywhere I go, everything I'm a part of. The question comes back to, how does this work out for me? Or how can I better my standing, or how can I improve upon the quality of life that I have for myself? And for purposes of the atonement, but also as a sense of an example, the disciples are following one who is very much involved in the world around him. He's there in a way to make a difference. And he's there in a way that reflects His glory. And the same is our call. The most common normative events of life become opportunities by which we can say, okay, Jesus, what do you want me to do? In this particular situation, what is the new that you're bringing out of the old? In what way does life become less about me and more about your glory? Now, we know that to be true, but it works against us, doesn't it? Because we've been conditioned. So desperately conditioned. Make the most out of life for yourself. It wasn't but 2 generations ago that the term ambition was not a compliment. Do you realize that? Ambition is basically the idea of how do I get this to work out best for me and my family. He's a real ambitious person. He's going to get things to work out. He's going to succeed. A couple generations ago, that was not a compliment. That was reflective of somebody's inward, self-centered nature. And now we celebrate it. And we promote it in our children. Get what you got coming to you. Go out and get the best things you can for yourself and your family. That's the old way. But the way of Christ has turned this thing up on its head. The one who deserves glory and honor and to drive everybody to their knees if they don't give it is coming upon the scenes to lay his life down. And folks, let me tell you, it's not as if this isn't going to work out just fine for you if you belong to Christ. At the end of the day, the issue is whether you're going to trust him to bring it together in a way that he sees fit for your benefit, whatever that looks like, and his glory. And so the age of the Spirit is breaking in upon us where life has changed dramatically. And Jesus starts his public ministry at a wedding, and he, in many ways, brings it to its greatest fulfillment in the closing of Revelation. If you have your Bible, I think this is worth looking at. Second to last chapter of Revelation, chapter 21. Just going to look at the first four verses. Jesus replaces and will ultimately replace the old with the new. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and earth had ceased to exist, and the sea existed no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, made ready like a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, the residence of God is among human beings. He will live among them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death will not exist anymore, or mourning, or crying, or pain. For the former things have ceased to exist." And God will be among them. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And those who belong to Christ are one spirit with him. It has begun. It is beginning. And it will come to its full completion. There's no reason to be bored. The new. Heaven and earth can break in to your world today. Through you and me. Father, we thank you for this wonderful message of the new wine and for a mighty Creator God, Lord and Savior, who is one we can identify with. And his claims of glory, and though we are participants, we share in and enjoy and celebrate. And it changes everything. Father, as we continue on in a time of song, I pray that the depths of the work of Christ would continue to grow And like his disciples believed, may we do the same. Grow in confidence that you are the way, the truth, and the life. I encourage you to go ahead and please stand as we continue on in a time of worship.